governed, effective city-state of Singapore, we had concerns. I led the CTC delegation to this first conference. CTC followed it with many more in Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. There was no better way to learn than to spend a couple of days with our foreign partners in a multilateral setting, listening to stories of their success and failure. More than just data or information, we developed an empathetic sense for their mission. We shared frustrations and aspirations, and we facilitated our allies' regional cooperation. Millennium Plot. At CTC, I received a full daily dose of intelligence and covert action reports, which informed my command decisions. It was a rich mixture of intensive on-the-job training and executive leadership. I listened and learned from the officers at CTC and those abroad. I learned from our foreign liaison partners. Somewhere in the world, night and day, under our direction, CIA officers were collecting intelligence and executing covert action operations against terrorist targets. During my tenure at CTC, there was no greater example of CIA's global success against AQ than the disruption of the Millennium Plot. AQ had designed multiple synchronized operations to kill thousands of people in several countries at the turn of the new century, 1 January 2000. With our partners, we stopped them cold. We had first gathered trickles of reporting about AQ's intentions in the late summer of 1999. CTC's analytical teams, working with collectors from all over the globe, aggregated these pinpricks of light into bold beams that illuminated the targets in Israel, Jordan, and other parts of the Middle East. There was also reporting about the homeland. We informed the FBI. We briefed the White House. By late November 1999, CTC had seconded scores of extra bodies from throughout the clandestine service and the Directorate of Intelligence to help sort through the reams of paper. Walking through the vast office space we had acquired to store and sort through all the reporting from NSA, CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, and elsewhere, I was struck by how primitive this all seemed. We were in the information age, at the forefront of information technology, and we had stacks of paper spread over the floor. We'd accumulated cartons of raw intelligence, with people toiling through reams of paper, page by page. I told Kofor and Rich that our information management needed an upgrade. We needed an IT makeover, but it was too late for that now. We were in the middle of a threat crisis. The teams collected, sorted, and analyzed the incoming reports. It was grueling, intensive, non-stop analysis and coordination. By mid-December 1999, CTC, working with foreign intelligence and police services, coordinated raids in more than 40 countries on four continents. Some of our allies were reluctant, but we pushed and prodded. Other allies, such as the Jordanians, were leading the way. Director Tenet played an important role, calling his various counterparts to encourage and thank them. AQ had planned to kill hundreds at religious services in Jordan and at a Jordan-Israel border crossing. The targets included the Radisson Hotel in Amman, Mount Nebo, and a Christian pilgrimage site along the Jordan River where Jesus was baptized. On 13 December, the Jordanian authorities arrested the cell. Eventually, more than 20 were convicted, including Baed Hijazi, a Boston taxi driver. We were frustrated and near frantic about the U.S. homeland. We knew from fragmentary reporting about AQ's intent, but when and where? Would they attack in Washington, D.C., U.S. government facilities, public transportation sites, malls? Who were the operatives? How could we identify them? On 14 December 1999, U.S. Immigration and Customs officers in Port Angeles, Washington, spotted an Algerian named Ahmed Ressam, who had crossed over from Canada. In Ressam's car, hidden in the spare tire well, The officers found more than 100 pounds of chemicals and explosives. They also discovered 4 operational timing devices. Rassam, a wanted criminal in Canada, had trained at AQ bases in Afghanistan the previous year and planned to construct and detonate his massive bomb at Los Angeles Airport. His capture was the result of alert law enforcement, not an intelligence tip. Even with these interdictions, we did not know the full extent of the AQ plots. Our teams labored through Christmas and New Year's, 24 hours a day. On 1 January 2000, there was a collective sigh of relief throughout CTC. Not a single attack had occurred. How many attacks had been thwarted and how many people saved, we did not know. Only much later did I learn that AQ had attempted to attack the USS The Sullivans in the port of Aden, Yemen, as part of the Millennium Plot. Their overloaded suicide skiff had sunk in the harbor as they approached their intended target. 10 months later, AQ would regroup and attack the USS Cole in Aden Harbor. In the aftermath of the Millennium Plot, and knowing full well the weakness of FBI intelligence in the homeland, I encouraged more CTC-FBI personnel exchanges at the working level. This included placing more FBI special agents in Rich's office so they could help the FBI discern AQ threats pointing to the homeland. Eventually, even the FBI New York office assigned their own special agent to Rich's shop for that sole purpose, to bridge the gap between agencies, between the foreign and the domestic battlefields. Greg. The CIA's counterterrorism success was not just about CTC. The vast amount of work from hundreds of analysts, operators, and support staff throughout the agency and the government contributed to the mission. Other components in the clandestine service, such as the geographic divisions, supplied the officers and the field leadership. This was especially true of the CIA's paramilitary arm, the Special Activities Division, SAD. In that component, there was no greater example of leadership than Greg, who would play a critical role post-9/11. In October 2001, I would select him as the team leader for a dangerous deployment into Taliban territory. He would help recruit an Afghan militia and lead them in a remarkable campaign, one of the most important victories of the war. Raised in the Deep South, born into a family steeped in military tradition and imbued with a warrior ethos, Greg could hold a blood grudge. He and I had that in common. He served in the U.S. Marines, then joined the CIA's SAD, and for 20 years deployed to Africa, the Balkans, and the Middle East. Greg was the best paramilitary officer in the CIA. As a deputy in CTC responsible for our worldwide efforts against terrorist groups, I often talked with Greg about our operations. He also served in HQS. He was one of the leaders in SAD, in charge of all the ground forces. CTC needed a close working relationship with SAD because of the many joint operations and training projects for foreign liaison. SAD often supplied expert manpower for CTC missions. This included our ongoing deployment of teams into Afghanistan. SAD also provided CTC with weapons, expeditionary technologies, training facilities, and other support. And anyway, I enjoyed Greg's searing, imaginative, profane, hilarious commentary. Average in height, rail thin, iron tough, and sporting various styles of facial hair, he possessed a gargantuan reservoir of energy. He loathed HQS. To vent his frustrations, Greg would run at a brutal pace for miles, preferably in scorching midday heat. He once developed a stress fracture in his foot, but refused to quit running. Somehow it healed. I remember in particular one of his visits to my HQS office in those pre-9/11 days. "Hey, Chief, you busy?" Greg asked as he stuck his head into my doorway. Of course I'm busy. We're chasing down these assholes everywhere. I just wish we could catch more. He came in and plopped down in the one spare chair in my office. As usual, he had rolled his shirt sleeves up to his elbows. His forearm muscles looked like cable wires braided together. When he spoke, his hard jawbone pulled tightly at his skin. We were in my cramped, no-window basement office. It was late January 2000, in the aftermath of the Millennium Plot success. We were proud of our work. Although National Security Advisor Sandy Berger described it as our most successful counterterrorist operation to date and thanked us, the administration and public seemed oblivious to the scope of the enemy's effort and our global surge to foil their terror plots. The failure of the administration to grasp the enormousness of the enduring threat was disappointing. Greg, in particular, was befuddled that the U.S. government, after yet another demonstration of AQ's evil intent and reach, seemed inert.